Do you guys find it aggravating when you ask somebody a question and they give you a non-answer answer? Do you know what I mean? You know what I mean. As a matter of fact, I bet you sometimes Cisco does that, doesn't he? Occasionally? There are probably lots of ways to do this. For instance, answering a question with a question. How many times does that happen? You want to just give me a quick answer, they ask you a question back, and then you go in circles. But today we're going to look at three times our Lord Jesus gave a non-answer answer. Not by a question, but a non-answer answer. And I wouldn't be surprised if he aggravated those who asked the questions. Aggravation on a receiver's part doesn't mean sin on the aggravator's part, does it? Because we know Jesus didn't sin. And one final note before we look at the first time Jesus avoided a direct response. What we are going to discuss here is another example of the benefits of reading through all 66 books in a row. I've read through this multiple times, but I never connected these occurrences in Matthew before. God always blesses us with insights if we will spend time in Scripture, and this is very important, with an open mind. With an open mind. So as we head toward the end of this year, please consider, prayerfully consider, in 2018, if that would be a good year, and you're not too young to do it, Cisco, but a good year for you guys to read through the Bible, through all 66 books. It just takes a little time each day. Okay. Imagine you're in a close-knit group with a beloved leader. Then your leader looks out at you and says, "One of you will betray me." You might not say it out loud, but wouldn't you kind of mentally ask, "Is it me?" That's the situation we find ourselves with the 12 apostles during the Last Supper. Let's turn to Matthew 26, verses 20 through 25. Matthew 26, verses 20 through 25. And we will spend most of our time in Matthew, going from, earlier page to later page. So you can kind of keep your finger there. Matthew 26, 20 through 25. When evening came, he was reclining at the table with the 12. While they were eating, he said, "Truly I tell you, one of you will betray me." Deeply distressed, each one began to say to him, "Surely not I, Lord." He replied, "The one who dipped his hand with me in the bowl, he will betray me. The Son of Man will go just as is written about him. But woe to the man by whom the Son of Man is betrayed. It would have been better for him if he had not been born." Judas, his betrayer, replied, "Surely not I, Rabbi." "You have said it," he told him. "You have said it," he told him. It does not record what Jesus' responses to the other 11 were, or whether actually he even responded, but to Judas, what does your version say he said?
"Thou hast said."
"Thou hast said." What's yours say, love?
"You have said so."
"You have said so." And as I've mentioned, I use the ESV to do stuff, and I have to find my reading Bible because there's another case where it's out of sync. But "you have said so." "Come on, Jesus, just answer the question." I can imagine Judas thinking, or at least in the Aramaic equivalent. So let's move on to the second time Matthew records Jesus replying this way in Matthew 26, 62 through 66. And this time, I'll make sure my eyes are aligned. Matthew 26, 62 through 66. So Jesus has been taken, and he's being tried. And he's before the Jewish rulers, who are doing their best to find a reason to condemn him unsuccessfully. The high priest stood up and said to him, "Don't you have an answer to what these men are testifying against you?" But Jesus kept silent. The high priest said to him, "I charge you under oath by the living God, tell us if you are the Messiah, the Son of God." What does he say? "You have said so." Your say, what's your say, your version? "Thou hast said." "You have said it," Jesus told him. "But I tell you, in the future, you will see the Son of Man seated at the right hand of power and coming in the clouds of heaven." Then the high priest tore his robes and said, "He has blasphemed. Why do we still need witnesses? See, now you have heard blasphemy. What is your decision?" They answered, "He deserves death. Tell us, are you the Messiah or not?" To which Jesus responds, "No, you're not." Exactly. And just remember that. And if anybody else tells you they're the Messiah, remember that, Anthony. There's only one Messiah. So he says, "Tell us, are you the Messiah or not?" And Jesus says, "You have said so." It does not appear that Caiaphas took the time to think, "Come on, Jesus, just answer the question." He was too busy damning the Son of God. He deserves death. Yes, Augie?
Was the type of damning you said a swear?
Nope, I was not swearing. That was in the actual true use of it. I'm glad you were concerned that Dad was an upfront swearing. There we go. But keep an eye on me. I am definitely human, so I might slip. "You have said so." And you know those Jewish leaders moved quickly after deciding he was deserving of death. They moved quickly, bringing him before Pilate. Matthew 27, starting with verse 11, contains the third and final recorded instance of Jesus saying, "You have said so." And by the way, this is the only "you have said so" that both Mark and Luke also include. So, Matthew 27, 11 through 14. "Now Jesus stood before the governor. 'Are you the king of the Jews?' the governor asked him. Jesus answered."
No.
What?
No. "It is as you say."
"It is as you say." That's interesting.
"No."
He said, "No." Well, he is. What's your say, love?
"You have said so."
"You have said so." "Thou sayest," which is the, did it say it the same way each time or no? In your version? But, well, let's go on. "Jesus answered, 'You say so.' While he was being accused by the chief priests and elders, he didn't answer. Then Pilate said to him, 'Don't you hear how much they are testifying against you?' But he didn't answer him or even one charge, so that the governor was quite amazed." Now, if there's a time not to be fuzzy or deflecting in your responses, it's when you are before someone who holds your life in their hands. Pilate was such a man. Simple question. Simple question. "Are you the king of the Jews?" Jesus' response,
"No.
You have said so."
He's like, "No."
Actually, what he said, Anthony, is, "You have said so." Which, we'll talk more about what that actually meant. Now, I'll be up front and say, just so you know, if you look at the Koine Greek for the first two cases, in the last case, this last case is different, slightly different Greek than the first two cases. In Greek, the English, "You have said so," is actually two words. The first word is the same in all three cases, but the second one varies when he's in front of Pilate. However, if I understood my Bible software correctly, the second word in all three cases has the same root word. So I think from a biblical perspective, there's good reason to look at all three of them together. Look at all three of those answers together. Now, some questions for you. Was Judas going to betray Jesus? Yes. Was Jesus Christ the Messiah?
Yes.
Yes. As a matter of fact, that's what Christ means, so kind of redundant. Was Jesus the King of the Jews?
Yes.
Yes. Now, probably not in the context that Pilate was thinking. Not a temporal, right? No, or the Jewish people at that time. Not a temporal one, but even though he wasn't going to be a temporal earthly king at that point, he was, yes. Jesus was the King of the Jews. So, in all three cases, when Jesus said, "You have said so," what does it equate to? Yes, exactly, Elisa. Yes. Jesus was saying yes. Ultimately, there is no more important question for humans than who is Jesus? Who is Jesus? It is a query that every human, implicitly or explicitly, is forced to answer. And I think that's important. People can tell you they're going to avoid the question, but this is a question that if you avoid it, you are answering it to the negative. Or I shouldn't say the negative because it's not a yes or no, but more of you are choosing a side. There is no way to avoid that question, who is Jesus? How will you answer that? But before you respond, let's look, we are going to turn back, at Matthew 16, 13 through 20. Matthew 16, 13 through 20. Are we there? Matthew 16, 13 through 20. When Jesus came to the region of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, "Who do people say that the Son of Man is?" They replied, "Some of them say John the Baptist, others Elijah, still others Jeremiah or one of the prophets." "But you," he asked them, "who do you say that I am?" Simon Peter answered, "You are the Messiah, the Son of the living God." Jesus responded, "Blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah, because flesh and blood did not reveal this to you, but my Father in heaven. And I also say to you that you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not overpower it. I will give you the key of the kingdom of heaven, and whatever you bind on earth will have been bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will have been loosed in heaven." Then he gave the disciples orders to tell no one that he was the Messiah. Someone comes up to you. They start peppering you with questions. Was Jesus betrayed by Judas?
Yes.
Yes. Is Jesus the Messiah?
Yes.
Yes. Is Jesus the King of the Jews?
Yes.
Yes. Who do you say that he is?
Yes.
Slow down. Yes. Very good. You got the theme. Now slow down a little bit before you answer that question. Who do you say that he is? You have spoken confidently up to now, including the little one, and your answers have been accurate. So don't blow it. Think.
Don't blow it.
Think. Think. What did Peter say? He said, "He is the Christ, the Son of the living God." And you say that he is the Christ, the Son of the living God. And a voice from above says, "Blessed are you, Cisco. Blessed are you, Anthony. For flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father who is in heaven." That'd be kind of nice, wouldn't it? Or instead, might you hear something like this? "Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and not do what I tell you? Everyone who comes to me and hears my words and does them, I will show you what he is like. He is like a man building a house who dug deep and laid the foundation on the rock. And when the flood arose, the stream broke against the house and could not shake it because it had been well built. But the one who hears and does not do them is like a man who built a house on the ground without a foundation. When the stream broke against it, immediately it fell, and the ruin of that house was great. That was from Luke 6, 46 through 49. It is great to be able to acknowledge that Jesus is the Messiah, the King of the Jews, and the Christ, the Son of the living God. But do our words and actions betray our true heart? Betray the Messiah, the King of the Jews, and the Christ, the Son of the living God? Everybody here. I'm sorry, Augie, what do you got?
I actually have a comment. Jesus isn't the Son of God, he is God.
He's both. Everybody here, including me, will betray Jesus at one level or another. We already have, and we will. Over and over. We do it every time we sin. Do we not? That doesn't mean that we are lying when we answer positively to questions about Jesus being the Messiah and King of the Jews. However, it also doesn't excuse those sins. Nor should it cause us to fail to engage in deep self-reflection when we are asked if our actions, and I should add words, but if our actions and our words align with our assertions. Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and not do what I tell you? Loved, let's make sure our foundation is on the rock, which means that we not just hear, we actually do, that our foundation is on the rock continually in good times and in bad, because the flood is coming. There is no question. The stream will break against us. And then we'll truly know Jesus' answer. It's a metaphor. What'll happen is, right now, it's easy for you to follow Jesus because things are good. You've got great parents. They feed you. They take care of you. You probably do well at school, too, right? Everything's going pretty good. But you know what? Sooner or later, things won't go very good. Or some bad person will try to get you to do a bad thing. They'll try to tempt you. And that's the flood. That's the stream. And then you'll see really how much you follow Jesus, right? Does that make sense? It's easy to follow Jesus when things are good. Not so easy to follow Jesus when things get hard. Does that explain it to you, Anthony? The flood is coming. The stream will break against us. And then we'll truly know Jesus' answer to the question for us. Is it I, Rabbi?